Welcome to The Sober Effect, a show that looks at the positives of sobriety, the dangers of alcohol, and the many people who are affected by it. I'm Kate.
And I'm Steph. The ripple effect of alcohol is far-reaching, and those are the stories you'll hear on The Sober Effect. We're going to talk about sober vacations, or sober holidays, as you guys call them over there. You know, we had actually someone request this episode, and we thought that'll be a fun topic for Kate and I to sit and chat about, because we have gone on some trips sober, and we definitely can, you know, talk about the contrast of what, and I mean, what I feel is now I actually go on a true vacation, where yeah. Before I needed a vacation after my vacation because I just drank 24/7 and came back and I felt like crap, you know?
Yeah. I've heard you talk about a couple of your holidays with groups of friends, and it did sound like you were just drinking all day. You know, I haven't been on holiday with groups of friends much. I've been on a few kind of weekends, but since I've had kids, you know, 15 years ago, it's family holidays. So It was just Nick and me drinking. So we tended not to drink all day during the day, but it was definitely every night. And, you know, starting at 3 or 4 rather than 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. And as you say, you get back and you just feel awful because you've just gotten pissed the whole time. That is not what a break is meant to be. You're meant to come back, you know, full of, oh, I've seen these new things. I've done these new things. I've met some new people. I've had time to myself. I've managed to unwind. I haven't looked at my phone. I haven't done any work. And it was always just about booze, to the point of let's get started on the train or on the plane.
Yes.
You know, airports are literally just a mass of bars. You go there and there's people no matter what time it is. What is that about, Steph?
What is it about airports? Yeah, I remember like my whole concept of time was out the window. The minute we hit that airport, time didn't exist anymore. It was all about getting drunk. And, you know, a lot of people are anxious flyers. I'm not saying, oh, I'm the only one. I think there's a good amount of people that feel anxiety around flying. And so then that was just another reason or excuse for me to be like, all right, I need to get there super early so that, one, we make sure we get to the gate and everything on time. But two, once we get to the gate, I'm going to go sit at the bar because I need at least 2 or 3 drinks to calm my nerves. And then you get on the plane and then it's like, okay, now I got to order another one to keep this going. I mean, I would be feeling pretty good by the time we got there. I mean, vacation was full on at that point. Like, and it's like, good God, I look back at that because now, I mean, I've flown sober and feel way less anxiety. But I mean, we've talked about my anxiety being related to my alcohol anyway. But I mean, now the flights are just so much more relaxing. I pick a book or a movie and, you know, I'm not worried about having to use the bathroom 20 times because I've drank my weight in alcohol. And like, it's just a different experience all around. Mm. And I think most people who have never flown sober, I mean, maybe when they were kids, but in their adult life, always have like alcohol and flying hand in hand. If you've never experienced it sober, you should really try it.
It's nice. It feels almost like a treat. Yeah. You sit there and someone brings you cups of tea or coffee and something to eat, and you get to watch a film and you get to look out of the window, or it's exciting because you're meant to be excited about where you're going or where you've just been. I remember when I got back, after a really bad breakup, I went to the States on my own for 2.5 months, and I just traveled on Amtrak across the country for a couple of months, and I got trashed the whole time, but I took loads of photos. And I got them printed as I went. I printed them out so I could look through them. I had a journal. I left all of it on the plane on the way home because I was so drunk, I forgot. And I literally left them. So 2.5 months of memories of people I'd met, information, and most of it was in this book, in this bag, and I left it on the plane and I never got it back. And I was like, I'm just such a mess. And I came back thinking, well, I'm just going to go and escape and I'm going to come back so much better. And I'm going to go because I need to get my mind in order because of this awful breakup. And I got back in a mess. It was an excuse for me to go and party for a couple of months, basically. And it was so embarrassing and it was such a shame. And I remember them talking to me, kind of saying, you've had too much to drink on the plane. And I didn't cause any trouble or anything like that, but I was clearly drunk.
Right.
Because they had to say something to me. But I hated it. But I drank every time I went on a plane. I didn't used to get to the airport at kind of 9 a.m. and have a drink. I've never been a morning drinker. It hasn't ever appealed to me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, once it hit 11, 12 o'clock, why not?
It's turned on.
It's the treat. And everywhere you look, like you get on the plane and the things that you look at, there's all these special deals. You go through duty free and it's alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. And again, it's everywhere. It's the treat. It's why don't you buy 3 for 2? Why don't you take this as a gift? I don't want it. So what are the differences between, because people get really nervous, and I remember being nervous before I went to the Canary Islands, which is where I went for my first sober holiday, and I didn't know what to expect. And my husband was drinking and was going to drink on holiday. And I was nervous without a doubt. And I came back so relieved and so happy. So what was your experience? Do you remember your first sober holiday?
I do. I was 4 months sober. I remember I hit my 4 month milestone the day we got to Florida. So it was a Florida trip and it was for cheer for my daughter. And
you might have to explain that. That doesn't make sense to an English person.
So my daughter was in competitive cheer.
Cheerleading.
So it wasn't like sideline cheer for a sport. Like this is a group of like 20 girls that are doing like full on gymnastics, pyramids, like throwing each other in the air. Like it's intense and it's really fun to watch. So their finals is in Florida every year. And what was kind of nice about the cheerleading, let me back up a little bit, is there was a lot of like weekends away. So I feel like these little weekends away were kind of practice for me to be around the environment because the cheer mom and dads loved to drink, right? It's like, this is a weekend away at a hotel. You know, the parents kind of use it as an excuse to drink and hang out all night. And then the girls were like, yes, you know, the parents are drunk and they're running around the hotel, just raising hell. So it was good practice for me. And, you know, we would go to the competition and I would watch everyone with their headaches. Because let me tell you, you don't want to be hungover at a cheer competition. So I was always reminding myself, like when we would get there and we're sitting there and the music, it's all day long and the music's just like boom, boom, boom. Like the bass is so loud and it's like that kind of music, you know, and you're just like.
Sounds like hell.
It is. Absolutely hell. All day. And I just remember I would just say to myself, okay, remember this. Like, this is why you're not drinking. Can you imagine being hungover right now? Not to mention the anxiety that I had when I would be hungover. That's an anxious environment anyway, right? Like, there's natural nerves for my daughter getting ready to go on stage and stuff like that. And it was so nice to not have that. Like, I would have a little bit of anxiousness for her, but oh my God, nothing like what I knew it would be if I had been drinking. And so it's like you've got to be very in the moment. And when that's happening, like make a mental note of how good it feels, you know, like in comparison. And that's what I would do. And that's what would keep me going. I mean, the moms would come over and be like, hey, we're going to do a shot really quick. Meet us in the bathroom before the girls go on stage. And I'm like, I don't drink. And they would forget. They would still come back around and ask. And I'd be like, I don't drink. Or I would just say, no, thank you. I'm good. You know, and it gave me a lot of practice, I guess, is what was nice. So I'm extremely grateful for that. But yeah, so by the time we got to Florida, I kind of felt like everyone knew where I was at and we did our own thing. It was probably one of my favorite trips to date because it was my first time going to Florida and not spending the majority of my time in a bar.
Did they exclude you a bit because of that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't care. Because introverted me, after being at a cheer competition all day, I wanted to be in my hotel room in my pajamas. I didn't want to go sit in the lobby. You know, we would just stay in the room. But yeah, that trip to Florida was amazing. Like I did things like I got up early in the morning which I've never had done in Florida and in past trips because I was sleeping in because I was hungover. But I would get up with the sunrise and go walk on the beach and feel good. And like I'd have tea at night before bed. And I don't know, it was just so relaxing. It was like we came back and I just felt so relaxed. And I'm like, aha, this is what vacation's supposed to be like.
It's so true. And that's exactly how I feel. And the mornings were incredible. I mean, I still love the mornings because there aren't as many people up and about, and you do feel like it's a really big treat to have this time. And there's just something beautiful about a new day. And I know I sound really like, woo, I love a new day, but it's just nice to have that time in the morning to not be rushing, to not be hungover, to not have a headache, to not be full of what have I done? What did I do? Why did I do that again? And it means that the days really feel like they're built on something, you know? And the fact that I could drive meant we could go places in the evening, because on holiday before, we always had to be close to the room within walking distance because no one wanted to drive, because everyone, every adult, however many of us there were, wanted to get pissed. So suddenly it's like, well, to the kids, well, should we go up into the mountains and watch the sunset? Yeah, mum, that'd be great. I would never have offered that. And, you know, let's pop down for a pizza down on the coast. Brilliant. Would never have offered that. We would have been at whatever was local and we would have just sat there drinking, and the kids probably would have been in the pool until it was dark and then watched TV. That's not fun for them. And I think that's part of it is when you have kids, it feels like really good quality time with your children. You get those moments where you go for a walk with just one of your kids. I mean, I know you've got one, but when you've got two, it's hard to get time alone. Yeah. You just think, I'm really present. I'm really enjoying this. I can feel myself unwind instead of ramping up. And you go back and you look healthier. You've seen more things. You're happier. You just feel like you've had a break. And that is exactly what they're meant to be. But there are definitely some tips about what kind of holiday you go on. And I think that was the kind of point of this episode was, how do you decide? And what are some tips of getting through it? And I think it really depends on your situation. You know, are you with a partner? Do you have children? Are you going away alone, in a group, on a family vacation with extended family? Those things will make a massive difference. And we can't cover all of them. We can't possibly go through every different possibility and combination. No. But I think there are some basic things that you can put in place before you go, and even when you're deciding where to go, that will make it easier for you and more enjoyable.
I agree. Because there are definite places as a sober person that I've been to that I don't have any desire to go back. Because like where? One of them would be Nashville. I've done Nashville twice. I went on a girls' trip. And then a couple of years later, Blake and I went with my best friend and her husband. And my friend's husband, after the first night, we showed up, we met at 11 a.m. That's the earliest we could all get up and moving. We met for like a lunch, and this poor man could hardly eat his food. He was so sick from the night before. And the waitress came up to us and she said, she could tell that he wasn't well. And she said, do you see that place right up the street? She like pointed out the window. She said, if you go there, they will give you an IV to make you feel
what?
And he's like, oh God. He's like, I hate needles. There's no way. Blake said to him, listen, if you want to go, I'll go with you and I'll get one too. Like, if you want to go. It got to the point. That's how bad, like, this man is deathly afraid of needles. He ended up going. That's how bad he felt. Him and Blake went to this, they had this place on Broadway, which is their main road, where you could go if you're hungover, and they will give you an IV of liquids to make you feel better so you can drink again.
That is crazy. And did it work?
It worked. Yes.
What is happening to us? What are we
There's doing? There's someone profiting off of hungover people in Nashville right now.
And also you feel better and then you think, I can do this again.
And you do.
Because I'm rehydrated.
Yep.
Now I know that place exists. I can go back. Oh my God, Steph, that is shocking. I've never seen anything like that. I mean, I thought New Orleans was bad because you'd literally walk along and it was just bars everywhere, literally bar after bar, everyone drunk, people doing weird things. And, you know, it was exciting for me, but that's because I was a massive drinker and everyone was hammered. And it was like, oh my God, I can do whatever I want here because everyone else is doing the same thing. But I would not go to a place like that, you know. And actually, most people who get sober don't want to be around drunk people. Mm-hmm. That's not saying they don't want to go anywhere where there is alcohol, but being around drunk people isn't fun. So I think you need to pick a holiday where you've got access to go to places. So if you're going on a package holiday, you know, I've been to the Dominican Republic and we were in a hotel which had armed guards around it and you couldn't leave the hotel. I was there for a week, you know, and it was a bit of a relaxation trip. So for me, it was fine because I just sort of slept, drank and swim. Mm-hmm. But if you were there sober, it would be incredibly boring and you couldn't leave. So
because there's nothing to do.
Just check out the local area, you know, make sure that when you get up in the morning, you are going to be able to safely walk somewhere and pick a spot that has things to do that are near you and that you aren't. I mean, I went away last month on my own to Spain for 5 days. And I just got a last minute deal 2 days before I took off. And I looked and I found a well-being resort and it was away from the main stretch in Lanzarote. And I thought, okay, I know this is a boozy place, but actually the fact it's a well-being place, the fact it no children, which weirdly means less drinking. And I made sure it was no children, not like a swingers hotel. Like when you say no children, adults only, you don't mean like X-rated. They were laughing like, no, it's just.
Yeah, you got to make sure.
Place.
Yeah.
It's a peaceful place. And we just do things like morning walks and yoga. And actually, we just don't have children here because people come here and there's a lot of meditating. But that was great because I felt safe. I knew I wasn't going to lay awake and listen to drunk people shouting all night who would then drive me mad. So it's just making, like, think about it. This is a time when you want to genuinely relax. You're going to want to go and explore. You're going to be up early and you're going to be going to bed early. But is that going to work? Because you don't want lots of loud noise. You don't want to be around bars. You want to be able to walk places in the morning. You don't want to have a massive drinking culture. So once you start to imagine it, you'll choose different places, I think.
I've never been one on like having an itinerary because
that surprises me about you.
Well, because I just wanted to go drink, right? If you have an itinerary, then it's like you got to go do all these things and it's like, but I just want to sit around and drink. But now, and I don't like to run a tight itinerary, but I do want to have a plan. And I think it's very important in sobriety anyway to have a plan. Like you should always have a plan so that, I mean, even just going to a party, you should have a plan on what you're going to do if it gets to a point where you're uncomfortable. So it's the same kind of thing. I mean, I would suggest like don't go on a vacation. Opt out of a trip if you're invited on a trip with a group of people where you know that that's the main focus of the trip is we're going to go to an all-inclusive resort and drink as many drinks as we can drink. And, you know, like you were saying, like stay just at the resort. Of course, that's fun when you're drinking because you feel safe. But I would opt out of that kind of a trip, you know, like I would politely decline because what, like you said, what are you going to go do? You're going to be completely bored. You need to just maybe go on a trip with your safe person, someone who respects your sobriety, or if you're not afraid, like Kate, and go alone, which I have yet to do that. That might be something I do someday, but I have yet to go on a trip alone. But I mean, even that, and something you've always wanted to do, even like, for example, when we went to Arizona, I wanted to climb Camelback. Like I've heard people have done it. I would have never wanted to do this when I was a drinker, by the way. And like, we were there for a whole week. So like the only thing I wanted to do that whole trip was that. Like, I didn't really care about anything else. And we went as a family, so I knew it wasn't like party city, like go get drunk and do all that. But it's like, just find something that you've always kind of wanted to do, whether it's maybe there's a museum or maybe there's something, like historical you're really into and you want to go see it. Or there's just so many cool things out there that I've never even thought about it. Because I just didn't think that that's what you do. I just thought, oh, that's boring. I'd rather drink. And then now that I've done that
it's the opposite, isn't it?
It is. So it's like, okay, drinking was so boring. Like,
and I've never thought about it before, about not having any kind of itinerary. Because I also like to plan things. And like you, I don't kind of go, we're getting up at 9 and we'll eat at 9:30. Okay, but I like to say each day, let's do something. That's why I was surprised. I was like, we're normally the same in our organizational things here, Steph. Don't leave me hanging here on my own. But you're right. I never used to because I didn't want to plan anything because I wanted to drink. And I never thought about it. But now looking back, of course, that's why I made those decisions.
Yeah.
I wanted a week of nothing. I didn't want to have to get up because I knew I'd be drunk the night before and going to bed at 2 o'clock. But now I need things to do. You need to have things to focus on because you are not going to want to just sit by the pool and read a book.
No.
When you're not drinking, because you don't have that recovery time and days are long. And you might want a couple of days doing that, but try and think of what you actually would like to do. And it's a really unique experience for most of us.
You want to have a memory, right? You want to have like something memorable about each trip is how I look at it. Because all my trips of the past, they like merge together. Like you really have to like sit and like try to figure out, wait, did that happen when we went that year or the year before? Because you
so
do
true.
The same
so
thing
true.
When you're a drinker, right? Like we went on two cruises. We basically cruised the same ship both times and we bought the drink package. So
what? The dream package?
The drink. The drink
package. Oh, does that mean it's all included?
Unlimited drink all day long. And I have to sit and like, I literally can't remember some of the ports, like which trip it was. Because one trip was with Blake's work. And then the other trip we took my dad. I can't remember sometimes which trip was what, because we just basically, it was like copy paste. Yeah. We had so much fun the first time drinking and just like getting obliterated. And so we wanted to do it again. And we did. And we did the exact. And there's not like a lot of cool memories, and like we didn't do any excursions because I mean, you can't do excursions when you've been drinking all morning. Like,
and once you start drinking, of course, you just want to stay at the bar and you want to talk to the other people who are clearly doing the same thing and making the same decision. So once you start, even if you had the intention of going onshore and visiting something, once you start, it's like, give me more of this. I'm hanging with these people. They're my kind of people. Let's get hammered, you know.
Yeah.
And that becomes, as you say, Groundhog Day again and again. And I'm like you. I've said it before. I have to look at my CV to work out where I was, which country, in which year. And I really wish I had a CV of things I'd done because I've got no idea. You know, I literally couldn't tell you if I had a week to try and work it out. It's just gone.
And it's a waste of money.
It's such a waste of money. And we haven't really ever spoken about money on our podcast, have we? We talk about emotional kind of backlash of drinking and the effects of all of that, but money is a huge one. Alcohol is so expensive. And you know, a lot of young people, like the Gen Zers, are not drinking. And when they're asked why, one of the main reasons, I mean, health and fitness, but money, they're like, we can't afford it. It's so expensive.
Well, and they think it's ridiculous. They're like, why would you spend money on something that's so poor for your health? You know, they'd rather put that money into the gym or get some really good organic vegetables. You know?
Like, brilliant. I love them for
their
that.
Priorities are way better.
Because I'm like, I wish I had been like that. I was the absolute opposite.
I know.
But yeah, and I think the amount of money we spend on alcohol, I mean, even some nights I'd spend a few hundred quid just buying people drinks in bars. It's hard to make sense of it. But yeah, money, you really do save a lot.
It goes into like, once again, excursions or souvenir. You can put it into other things.
Yeah.
Like, you feel like you got something out of it other than a hangover.
The disappointment would be so unbearable when you look back and you think, I just got drunk on every holiday I went on. What's the point if you're just going to go away and drink? But I think when you're choosing where to go, be adventurous.
Yeah.
Do something different because you need that dopamine hit. So really think about, what do I want to do? Is it hiking, bike riding, walking? Do I want to explore a city? Do I want to go to a forest? Do I want to go camping or a treehouse? Like really think outside the box and Google for inspiration. Get online and Google unusual holidays or solo trips or places for families that are adventurous. Depending on what you want to do, because rather than just going away and sitting by a bar, you're actually going to go away and have an amazing experience for you that will enrich your life. And that is really exciting. And that's what you realize, isn't it? Once you've done one or two, you're like, this is amazing.
I think one of my favorite memories is like some of my favorite times with Adeline and Blake. You know, we'd be up late, laying in bed in the hotel room, the three of us just laughing. You know, it'd be like 1 a.m. and we would just be laughing about things. And I just remember thinking to myself, I could be in the lobby right now with the rest of the parents drunk off my ass, or I could mm-hmm. be stumbling in this room right now, passing out and missing out on this very moment. And not only is it a memory for me, but it's a memory for Adeline. Like, that's how she's going to remember it. And it was just really profound. That's what trips are about, right? Creating memories and creating, you know, experiences with the ones you love. Thanks for tuning in. We're just two women from opposite sides of the pond striving to shed light on the negative impacts of alcohol. Quick heads up, we're not licensed therapists or doctors. If alcohol is seriously affecting your mental or physical health, seek professional help.
And don't forget to hit that follow button to catch all of our future episodes. If you think our podcast could make a difference to someone you know, share the love. And hey, leaving a 5-star review will really help the Sober Effect reach more fantastic people like you. So thank you.